Okay, before we have our quiet time, let's all get on the same page. If you're in the Sparkly Book, it's page 369, the last paragraph. If you're in the second edition, it's page 322, paragraph 2. If you're in the first edition, it's page 300, the first full paragraph. If you're reading from the JCIM, it's page 155, the second full paragraph. And if you're reading from the CIMS edition, it is page 311, paragraph 86. Okay, let's take a few moments to be quiet together. Good evening. And welcome to everyone who's joining us on the internet. There's so much to talk about, so much to consider. A sign outside a church said, "If you want to find your way home, use GPS, God's plan for salvation." That is what the sign said. And we've been talking about God's plan for salvation, haven't we? For quite a few weeks. We've been talking about the holy instant and special relationships, the holy instant and the laws of God, the holy instant and communication, and the holy instant and real relationships. And all of those were preceded by practicing the holy instant. The holy instant, simply put, is God's plan for salvation. Now, when you're depressed, when you're ill, when you're discouraged, when you're experiencing hurt feelings, whenever anything negative is going on, it's from one of two things. It is either from you saying, God's plan for salvation doesn't work, or you're picking up on the energy of someone else saying, God's plan for salvation doesn't work. And there's one other option, and that is that either you or someone else whom you're picking up on is saying, I don't want God's plan for salvation to work. Which means I want my plan for salvation to work. Now, mind you, none of those things create a good feeling. None of those things allow for peace to emerge or for love and joy to emerge from the peace, and provide the environment in which a sudden shift of perception can occur. Those things simply cannot happen. But God's plan for salvation does work. And God's plan for salvation is guaranteed to work. Now, there should be a cartoon drawn that shows a view of hell with flames, brimstone, and thousands of souls crying and whining and moaning and talking about their distress and the unfairness of it all and talking story and never ending grumbling. And on a pinnacle overlooking all of this stands me, stands Jesus. And the caption says, "If you want to get out of hell, the first thing you must do is shut up." Which, of course, is the first step of the two-step, isn't it? If you want to get out of hell, if you want to get out of the constant rehearsing of your bad luck and the constant rehearsing of the unreasonableness and the injustice of what's going on in your life, the first thing you must do is shut up. The two-step is another description of the holy instant. You can't hear God when you're talking. You can't hear anything else when you're talking and complaining. The reason you're talking, the reason you're complaining, is so that someone else will hear you. So you're not interested in listening. You're interested in someone else listening. You're interested in occupying someone else's mind and attention with your story, with your distress, with how terrible it is in hell, and the fact that God's plan for salvation doesn't work, so therefore you are eternally stuck in hell. Right? But there is a way out. There's a way out of the hell that's called the human condition. The hell that is made up of the constant state of ignorance and the suffering that accompanies not knowing the truth. There is a way out. It requires you to utilize the holy instant. It requires you to get what you want to say out of the picture. It requires that you stop being the authority, the asserter, if you will. It requires that you become still and receptive. It requires you to bring yourself into the quietness which will always bring your attention to the instant you're in, free of the past, free of the future. The holy instant. Because your mind, because you are the state of attention, attention itself, when you bring yourself into the quietness of the present, You are a natural presence of curiosity, an invitation to know something. And since you are not determining what it is that you must know, that simple, pure attention, that simple, pure presence of curiosity will constitute a prayer. I want to know. I want to know. And the only thing there to respond is the Father through the voice for truth, the Holy Spirit, that which is nothing more than your right mind. Now, we've talked at length about this for a number of weeks. And I want to take a moment tonight to point out to you that the purpose of talking about this has not only been to emphasize the fact that the Father's plan for salvation works and is guaranteed to work, the goal of the plan for salvation is not the specific answers to your specific prayers, but is to bring you back into your right mind, to bring you to that place of inquiry within yourself of the Holy Spirit, which is nothing more than your right mind. That which, when it responds to you, is your right mind connecting you in your very private sense of a small mind and undoing the boundary between the two. Which allows the influx of the Father's perspective. And when you find that state of being to be more important to you than anything else, a right mind and a wrong mind disappear. Your right mind, the Holy Spirit, and the little separated off part of that mind, which you've claimed to be the entirety of you, which has been designated as the ego, those two things cease to be two things because the boundary, the artificial boundary, separating off a small part of what you are in your entirety, has dissolved, and unity, wholeness, totality has replaced it. The integrity and wholeness of you that is in no way different from the mind of God has re-emerged as your actual conscious experience of being, and for lack of better words, sanity has returned to you. Now, the point of all of it is not to get a leg up on the human condition, not to have a way to make the human condition improve, although that will happen. The point of it all is to no longer be crazy, if I may be blunt. is to no longer be experiencing distortions and thinking that what you're experiencing is actual, real, orderly, and the stuff of life, which somehow you have a way of imagining that God created that way, so that you're completely at peace with an experience of stress, of sin, disease, death, suffering, you see? So, a sudden shift of perception, a miracle, occurs in the holy instant. And at the bottom line, the sudden shift of perception, that is the point of it all, is you experiencing the healing of insanity. You coming fully back into your right mind. Your inseparable oneness with God. Where every aspect of you reflects an intent. That intent being, Thy will be done, God, Father. That's what you were made for. That's what you experimented with having a slight twist on. And it's that that you will come back to. Because as I said last time, you cannot maintain that distorted perception indefinitely. Now, I'm going to back up one paragraph. As the ego would limit your perception of your brothers to the body, she's a body, he's a body, she's a body, I'm a body, she's a she and I'm a he, and wow, we can do great things together as he and she bodies, and so on, you see. As the ego would limit your perception of your brothers to the body, so would the Holy Spirit release your vision and let you see the great rays shining from them. Shining from what? Their bodies, or shining from them, your brothers? The illumination of the great rays is the illumination emanating from your brothers and sisters. The presence of God called you and your brothers and sisters. Again, as the ego would limit your perception of your brothers to the body, so would the Holy Spirit, that which is nothing but your right mind that intends for you to regain your sanity, so would the Holy Spirit accomplish this by releasing your vision and let you see the great rays shining from them, so unlimited that they reach to God. It is this shift in vision which is accomplished in the holy instant. The holy instant is God's plan for salvation. Yet it is needful for you to learn just what this shift entails, so you will become willing to make it permanent, to make commitment to it. Given this willingness, it will not leave you, for it is permanent, you see. It's only your willingness to give your attention to it that is impermanent at the moment. Given this willingness, it will not leave you, for it is permanent. For once you have accepted it as what? The only perception you want, it is translated into knowledge by the part which God Himself plays in the atonement. For it is the only step in it He understands. It's actually at this point that your right mind and your ego personality, your wrong mind, disappear as a twosome, because as I said, the artificial boundary separating off this small part of you from the totality of you dissolves. Now, it's all the presence of mind that is God being all there is of you, and you're having no further different experience of that. Therefore, in this, there will be no delay when you are ready for it. God is ready now, but you are not. Now, continuing, our task is but to continue as fast as possible the necessary process of looking straight at all the interference and seeing it exactly as it is. For it is impossible to recognize as wholly without gratification what you think you want. You see, you wouldn't want it if there was not some form of gratification in it. And so, what doesn't contribute to your sanity, even though you presently find gratification from it, has to go through a transformation of some sort that allows you to see that it's not gratifying you. That although the thrill of the chase may be exciting, the fact that you never consummate it by catching what you're chasing, that should be all it takes for you to abandon what doesn't work and to abandon thinking that there's satisfaction in trying to accomplish what can't be accomplished. Now, the body is the symbol of the ego, as the ego is the symbol of the separation. Okay, so here we are. Here you are. You are the presence of mind, as God has created you, as God is creating you, as God is being you. You are the unseparated totality of the conscious awareness of infinity and eternity that's called creation. The conscious experience of all that God is being eternally. And then, for some strange reason, it's as though you've blown a little soap bubble right in the middle of this infinite mind that is your presence, that is presencing itself, and it's you. And this little soap bubble has enclosed a small part of the totality, so that everything in it is some part of the totality of God, of you. Everything in it's real, but the boundary's artificial. But the boundary is being interpreted as you. And it's a novel experience. And you have fun with it initially. You're enjoying the autonomy, the separation, okay? This part of the infinity of you that is enclosed in this very delicate bubble that has no strength, really, to maintain itself. We have identified as the ego. So, the separation, which really means that a flimsy surface, a sphere, has enclosed a part of the infinity of you. It becomes the symbol of separation. And then, from that tiny vantage point, something that hadn't been important on its own before suddenly has become important, and it's what you call your body. And so, the body is the symbol of the ego, as the ego is the symbol of the separation, you see? And both are nothing more than attempts to limit communication, and thereby to make it impossible. Well, communication. Communication with what? Communication with the whole of you. Because, you know what? That which God created called you is that infinite awareness that God is. And God's self-expression is infinite. And so there is the brotherhood. And all of your brothers and sisters, all the sons and daughters of God, will say, are present in this infinite mind that is God, that is creation, that is your conscious experience of being. The moment you drew this little sphere around a small portion of the infinitude of you, and then identified it very specifically with this body, this visibility and tangibility of you, although not the totality of you, you lost communication. You lost direct communication with all of the brotherhood. And I've described this before in a helpful way. If you would imagine a large crystal ball with many facets all around the surface of the ball, and if you were to imagine every facet as what you could call an individuality, you and all of the brotherhood, all of the sonship, well, if you were to be inside this crystal sphere, with all the facets, and you saw all of the facets from the interior, you would recognize Mary and Joe and Peter and all of the sonship. And they would just be over at the other side of you, so to speak, as you would be over at the other side of them. And the interior of the crystal ball would be the continuity of you extending to everything, and everyone else, for everyone else. The interior of this ball and all of the other facets would constitute part of the totality of them. All of you would be the same one, you might say. In this way, you could see that you have communication with everyone, and no one is different from you, but no one is the same as you. But now, you've had this little imaginative experience of separating a small part of you from the totality, and in effect, it's as though the facet you are on the surface that you were experiencing from the interior flips. And suddenly you're on the exterior. And now there's Mary and Joe, and, well, you can't quite see everybody anymore. But there are a bunch that are close by, and but now you have to yell. You have to do something to get their attention because they're not all connected with you, but they're all close by. And so you've lost communication. You've lost union. You've lost communion, you see? You've lost communication. The body is the symbol of the ego, as the ego is the symbol of the separation, and both are nothing more than attempts to limit communication and thereby to make it impossible. For communication must be unlimited, you might say, it must occur from within, where the wholeness of all is continuous and unseparated, in order to have meaning. And deprived of meaning, it will not satisfy you completely. Yeah, flipped over on the outside, trying to experience connection and relationship, will not satisfy you completely. Yet, it remains the only means by which you can establish real relationships. Unlimited communication remains the only means by which you can establish real relationships. So you might say that waking up is doing the two-step, leaning into the Father. You might say it's sort of like leaning in to the interior of the crystal ball, so that a sudden shift of perception can occur, a flip-flop, you see. Why? Because you've abandoned the glory you thought would be embodied in your being on the outside, where the facet that you were was quite distinct from all the rest, and might become something of importance on its own, you see. But continuing, real relationships have no limits. Having been established by God, real relationships are the relationships from the interior of the crystal ball. Now, we're going to leave the crystal ball symbol and continue here. In the holy instant where the great rays replace the body in awareness, the recognition of relationships without limits is given you. What does that mean when the great rays replace the body in awareness? In other words, when the illumination of love, that is the substance and character and nature and motivation and presence of your brothers and sisters and you, when they replace the body in terms of importance, when they replace the body and the uses you've been putting the body to for communication, the recognition of relationships without limits is given you. It doesn't mean that there's no longer anything there identifying you. It means that the meaning of body has shifted from a limited means of communication to an effulgence of love that reaches all the way to the Father, completing the circle of communion, of communication, of making one, a wholeness out of what had been two. in the holy instant, where the great rays replace the body in awareness, the recognition of relationships without limits is given you. Sudden shift of perception. A whole way, a whole new way of being with each other. Where the meanings of being with each other are new, not usury, not stemming from smallness, defense, self-protection, but which are an interactive acknowledgement of truth, an interactive acknowledgement of God in each of you, in all of you, all at the same time. An experience of joy that also is unlimited. An experience of joy that you feel but is shared by all of the sonship. And then their joy that they are sharing with you gets shared back with you. So that the joy becomes a movement of love spreading through the sonship, engulfing it in its wholeness, in its totality. It's a new experience. Far more meaningful than what you've been experiencing while thinking that you're just bodies communicating to each other through bodies. But to see this, it is necessary to give up every use the ego has for the body and to accept the fact that the ego has no purpose you would share with it. You see? Here's where you have to arrive at discovering that what you want isn't what you want. Because what you have wanted is this chase after the carrot that can't ever be accomplished or consummated. It's meaningless, and you're ready to see it as meaningless and to give it up, to just abandon it. That's how the flip of the facet from the outside to the inside occurs. For the ego would limit everyone to a body for its purposes, and while you think it has a purpose, you will choose to utilize the means by which it tries to turn its purpose into accomplishment, which is to continue running after that carrot forever, and thereby provide yourself for a forever experience of frustration and seeming justification to think that God's plan for salvation doesn't work. The learning here is you arriving at a point where you're willing to look straight at exactly what is happening and not gloss it over with imagination so that you say, hey, I've been chasing this carrot for my whole life and I've thought it was getting me somewhere, but if I'm going to be honest with myself, it hasn't gotten me where I thought it was going to get me. And therefore, I'm going to give up on that, and I'm going to try God's plan for salvation. Well, you know what? You can practice the holy instant. And maybe, because there's residual reluctance to believe that what it represents can be true, you don't experience it. And then you seem to have justification for saying, but God's plan for salvation doesn't work. Well, I'm here to tell you that it does, and that it is guaranteed to work, and that if you have a seeming incapacity to believe that it works, you have to persist in the face of it. Now, you know what? The way to experience your real relationship, which is with God, is to join with the Holy Spirit, which is the voice for God, but is also that which is nothing more than your right mind. And you say, "Well, I can't hear my guide." The Father's, God's plan for salvation doesn't work. "I can't hear my guide." Well, you know what? You may wait from week to week to hear Paul let me speak, so to speak. As a substitute for hearing your guide. But you know what? More than the information that I lovingly share with you every week, you are seeing a demonstration of the fact that the two-step works. You are seeing a demonstration of the fact that the holy instant works. You're seeing a demonstration of the fact that God's plan for salvation works, even though Paul hasn't made total commitment yet. The point is that when you say in so many words that the only way back home that you've been told about, which is to connect with your guide, which is the Holy Spirit, doesn't work for you. That the only way back home that you've been told about doesn't work for you. You're creating a false learning for yourself and delaying the inevitable. You could call it a learning failure. Don't do it. You think Paul just one moment said, "I want to talk to my guide. Are you there?" And I was there. Well, I was there. But he didn't hear me. And he didn't hear me the second or third time. And days went by. The only reason he heard me was because he persisted. And he finally arrived at a point where his listening wasn't conditional. In other words, he wasn't saying, "If you speak to me tonight, I will listen." Or, "If you speak to me within the next 2 weeks, I will continue to listen. But I'm not going to do this forever." He tried that. And then he arrived at a point where he said, "You know, if it takes a year, if it takes 2 years, I want to be able to experience what the truth is when I need to know what it is. And that's more important to me than a time limit. That's more important to me than trying to leverage the universe to get it to do what it's going to do when I want it." And so he started sitting down to listen with resolve. Not force, not willfulness, but with an absence of impatience. And you're going to have to do the same thing because it's the only way home. If you want to get out of hell, the first thing you're going to have to do is shut up. There ain't no other way. And it is a very direct route. But you're used to complaining. You're used to what might be called an orphanage welfare system, where the worse your need is, the more help you get, and the less need there is for you to do anything to upset the status quo, you see. So, the ego would limit everyone to a body for its purposes, which are to chase after the carrot, and while you think it has a purpose, you will choose to utilize the means by which it tries to turn its purpose into accomplishment. This will never be accomplished. See, that's the honesty that you have to arrive at, the awareness. This will never be accomplished. Yet you have surely recognized that the ego, whose goals are altogether unattainable, will strive for them with all its might, and will do so with the strength which, what? You have given it. You know what? The capacity to have an intent that exists inside the bubble that's floating around in the middle of the infinity of you is the same intent that's outside of it. You, the Holy Son of God, express an intent with all of the power of the Holy Son of God. The ego, whose goals are altogether unattainable, will strive for them with all its might, and will do so, what? Not with its strength, but with the strength which you, the Holy Son of God, have given it. The only thing is, you really like this little delicate bubble. And you say, I have no power. I want something, but I don't have any power. I'm not connected with any power source. I just have my own guts and my own capacity to try to do things, and I'm improving it all the time, you see. But I'm really helpless and hopeless. And I'm really struggling in my life. And oh, there you are down by the river Styx with all the flames, talking story about how awful it is and how stuck you are, you see. And it's all crap. It's all imaginary. And it all seems believable because you just love this bubble, which, I must repeat, is so delicate that it really is not going to take any force from you to pop it. Okay? And that's what we're learning about, the two-step and the holy instant. It is impossible to divide your strength between heaven and hell, God and the ego, and release your power unto creation, which is the only purpose for which it was given you. You see? You can't split up your attention and give your full attention to two different things at the same time. Thus communication is interrupted. Thus wholeness is unavailable to you as an experience. Thus, sin, disease, and death, and suffering, and stories to tell as you burn, occupy your time, and you willingly let it. But you don't have to, and it's not appropriate, and it doesn't work, and that's where you need to become honest. So that you dare to go through your day tomorrow or today willing to see things new, willing to let the bubble pop. And the way you will to have it pop without using force or bringing force to bear upon it is to simply neglect to do anything else. You see? Simply neglect to do anything else. In other words, shut up. Shutting up brings you into quietness. Shutting up brings you into quietness that is peace. Shutting up brings you into quietness, which is peace, which is the now, which is the instant in which the attention that you are, because you are mind, constitutes an unwillful desire that allows the Father to answer, that allows the Holy Spirit to answer and break, pop the bubble, and bring back into oneness that which always had been one, except for this little flimsy bubble that looked like it separated this part from the big part. Your power, your presence is meant to extend unto creation. It is meant to be in constant communication with every part of eternity, of infinity. And because its nature and function is love, it's a movement, a forever movement of, behold, I make all things new. Creation. Love would always give increase. Limits are demanded by the ego, representing its demands to make little and ineffectual. Limit your vision of a brother to his body, which you will do as long as you would not release him from it, and you have denied his gift to you. If you refuse to look at your brother with a willingness to see something new and very different from him as a physical organism, if you will look at your brother with a curiosity to see God there, truly, truly because you've been told that God is the only thing that is there, and you release him from your expectation that he will behave like the body you always thought he was. What's happened? You've provided the environment in which an influx of revelation can occur that will help you see your brother through the Holy Spirit's eyes, through the eyes of your right mind. And that recognition about your brother will tell you that it's the truth about you as well. And so the gift you give to him, you get to keep. And you are put in the position of finding that a movement has occurred that you can only identify truly as learning, because you're not where you were just before the holy instant. His body cannot gift. His body cannot give it. His body cannot give the gift you need, which is the realization of the Holy Son of God that you are, which is a realization that you are, your very being is. An effulgence of light, an effulgence of living love, constituting great rays that return to God and fill the universe, fill creation. Your determination to see your fellow man as a body disallows for that experience, disallows for that revelation and learning. His body cannot give it, and seek it not through yours. How many times do you use your body to elicit a good response or a gift from another? Seek it not through yours. Seek it not through your body. Yet, your minds are already continuous, and their union need only be accepted, and the loneliness in heaven is gone. Again, when that facet flips to the inside, so that your view of everything is an interior view, you find that your minds, the minds that appeared to be individual and separated from the outside of the faceted crystal ball, are really continuous and unseparated in any way when viewed from the interior. And even though they are continuous, the facets do not disappear. The sonship does not dissolve into an undifferentiated mass of love. Your minds are already continuous. Right now, when you're not experiencing it all, simply because you're flipped to the outside and you're looking around on the surface, your minds are already continuous, and their union need only be accepted, and the loneliness in heaven is gone. If you would but let the Holy Spirit tell you of the love of God for you and the need your creations have to be with you forever, you would experience the attraction of the eternal. If you would but let the Holy Spirit tell you. If you would but let the telling of the Holy Spirit register with you, this would be your experience. Because the Holy Spirit hasn't stopped for a moment. From that time when you decided to ignore it, the totality of you, in favor of this interior of a flimsy little soap bubble. Remember, we're not here to repair or reform the orphanage. We're not here to improve the human condition. We're here to have sanity returned. So that the kingdom of heaven is re-recognized as the kingdom of heaven. Because you've decided not to observe it through the lens of private selfhood and independence that cause it to be nothing more than a physical universe having nothing to do with God and being holy in no way. You might say, wow, I could never have gotten all of that out of those few paragraphs all by myself. And that would be the truth. Thank God you have a guide. Thank God there is the more of you outside of the little flimsy bubble called the Holy Spirit. That is your right mind. Because the fullness of reality becomes available to you like this without your having to tune into someone else. When you stop whining about your situation and shut up. That's the way out of hell. That's the way out of suffering. Enjoy shutting up this week, often. And I look forward to being with you next time.